As we are going to delve into the fixed income world and whether we are seeing some of the same caution that is being expressed elsewhere in fixed income as well. For that, we bring in Rick Rieder. He is the Chief Investment Officer of Global Fixed Income at BlackRock. Rick, it is always great to catch up with you. We've been talking a lot this morning about how we've been seeing equity strategists cut their S&P 500 forecast. And there does seem to be a bit of a shift in tone and sentiment coming from strategists more broadly. On the fixed income side, how are you feeling? I mean, we do see kind of fixed income markets take tapering expectations in stride up till now.
So, I mean, and thanks for having me. So I'd say a couple of things. First of all, I run large equity portfolios as well. So, and the dichotomy between the two is pretty extraordinary. I mean, I would say first thing was, how is the fixed income market taking, you know, tapering? Or, I mean, it is to say in stride is an understatement. The amount of supply that's coming to market in investment grade credit last week, $75 billion was priced in 4 days. By the way, there were Jewish holidays in there as well to price that much. High yield, the loan market is pricing immense amounts of supply. The treasury market, we had treasury refunding. Markets are having no problem with the Fed taper. In fact, the Fed taper and the discussion of the Fed is so insignificant. Well, we're talking about $15 billion a month. We got $75 billion of riskier investment grade supply in 4 days. It's just not, you know, people don't put the sheer size of it, you know, particularly when a Fed is delinking rate from the quantitative easing program. It's just, the markets are in good shape. The demand for income, the demand for return, I've been doing this 35 years. I've never seen this extraordinary amount of demand there. So, by the way, so I do run big equity funds. I actually think the equity market, I think I haven't read this Goldman piece that y'all were referring to, but you look at what revenue growth is, you look at what these companies are building book equity at 20, 25%, 30% per annum. And you think about that, gosh, the intrinsic value of my stock is going up 20, 25% per annum, whereas the 10-year note yields 1% with real rates at negative 1%. It just puts into perspective the paradox between value in the fixed income market and the equity market today, where I don't think equities are high by any measure.
So, Rick, what accounts for all of this demand that you're talking about? I mean, is it people like to point the finger at the Fed, of course, and say, oh, it's because of all the liquidity in the system and it needs a place to go. Is that what's going on here? Is there something more to it? It seems like that seems overly simple. I don't know.
The Fed is the no doubt. I mean, in fact, I think the Fed is creating an overcrowding dynamic, particularly in the front end of the yield curve. There's not enough collateral to fulfill the amount of that the Fed has to put into the system. So I do think the Fed is over enhancing the amount of liquidity in the system, but it's so much bigger than that. We're going through a demographic evolution and a need for income. And by the, that is extraordinary. Pension funds, insurance companies, by the way, not just domestically. You look at Japan, you look at other parts of the world that have a need for yielding assets. We don't have the inflation rates we have here. That amount of money. And by the way, as the equity market runs up, people look at balancing their portfolio and say, gosh, my equity just became a bigger portion of my portfolio. I need to reduce that and I got to buy more fixed income. So the demand for yield and income, and by the way, this is not a temporary, this is part of why I would argue the Fed tapering would have a more than an insignificant effect on us in the near term, because particularly since the system is overstuffed with liquidity. But the demand for income is going to be something that is going to be the hallmark of this investment decade, without question to me. I mean, it's just, I mean, and when you look at the sheer size of wealth that's been created, and we look at, by the way, the consumer today, part of why I think growth is better than people, forward growth will be better than people think. Consumer has not only built up huge amounts of savings relative to history, but it's also paid down their debt, and their house is in much better shape than it's been before. So consumers in great shape, the need for savings and expenditure will be strong from here.
Rick, why do you think, just looking at the equity component, why do you think investors are ignoring some of these correction calls we've gotten lately?
So first of all, there's too much money. I mean, the amount of, and you know, not only is there too much money, the alternative is not attractive at all. And so what's happening, and by the way, much of the way we're running our big unconstrained portfolios is, gosh, I don't want to own a lot of those quality assets that the Fed is putting at rates, at prices that don't make sense. So you hold more cash, but then you can get more equity upside. But also, I think there's something historic that we're going through. When you talk about these companies building book equity as fast as they are, and you look at the earnings yield of the equity market or the free cash flow yield, even what I think, I think coming from a credit side, I like free cash flow yield better than anything. I mean, we're seeing more and more companies throw off the average of the index is over 4% earnings yield, just above 4% free cash flow yield. Those numbers are incredible. And when you could build book equity as fast as you can, and then you think, okay, so what's my fundamental backdrop? You know, people look at prices and say, well, actually, we're at records. And I always find like a record, but if you're building book equity that fast and you're throwing up that much earnings yield, these multiples are not high at all. There are some stocks that are too high, but the overall aggregate level of valuation is not bad in an environment, particularly where a big part of how you build a balanced portfolio, i.e., safe quality assets, is too rich. So there's a natural inclination. Let me get into more of those assets, but I don't think they're overpriced today. In generally, I can find a few that you wonder why people are buying.
Rick, you can always find those, I think. Rick, what's going to happen with rates before the end of the year? And is that going to change the valuation picture of stocks? Because that's really one of the key areas, the key risks that we're hearing strategists these days point to, is that rates are going to go up, and that's going to be bad for a lot of American companies.
So, I mean, we agree that rates should move moderately higher. But, rates have moved higher this year. From think about where we started this year, I think the 10-year note got down to 51 basis points or so over the last 12 months. And so rates are higher than where they've been. I think rates are going to go higher. These real rates are not priced right. I mean, if the Fed, takes their foot off the gas a little bit, rates could move higher. The Treasury is issuing to fund the fiscal expenditure. The amount of coupon supply, Treasury supply is higher. So I think rates can move moderately higher. But then you got to step back and put it in perspective. How much higher rates going? Gosh, I think the 10-year note can go up 30 basis points. Maybe next year we get a few more basis points on top of it. You go back and think about that in time. Let's say the 10-year note is gonna be at 1.5%, 1.625%. You think about historically what that means, and particularly what that means relative to, you've got two things happening. One, you've got historically low interest rates, not as low as they were a few months ago, but pretty darn low. And then you've got book value accretion, or return on equity growth, that is actually at all-time highs. So to move rates up 30 basis points is nothing. I mean, if it happened in a day or a couple of days, people take a step back and say, gosh, I've got to readjust, I got to think about this. But it's not going to come on the backside of the Fed announcing they're going to taper. I mean, each time the Fed comes out, quote unquote, more hawkish, markets take about 2 hours to interpret it, and then they end up doing well again. So, gosh, I think you have to put in perspective this level of interest rates, and rates are just not going to go that high from here. They're just not.
Hmm. And Rick, switching gears a bit, I think we were talking to you earlier in the year when BlackRock was just studying or looking at crypto and how it might get involved. Where does the firm stand at today? Where are you involved in it aggressively? Are you looking at it, and where do you think prices can head from here?
I mean, I have small pieces in a couple of my big portfolios, and I view it as similar to when I own a, venture capital, or say, we don't do a lot of venture, but second stage of growth equity holding in some of my portfolios. Gosh, I think it could have some real upside. My sense is there's more buyers than sellers. It is an asset class that I think is durable. Listen, is it a hedge? Not really. It doesn't correlate with debt or equity. When people say it's a hedge, it's a monetary policy hedge. Don't know. I mean, I see answers for that are on the plus side, negative side. So we own small amounts of it. And, it's quite frankly, I'm glad I do, because it's helped me learn about the evolution of what I think will be a blockchain technology that will continue to grow. So it's something I'm glad I got involved with, but it's not driving portfolio return relative certainly my equities or my fixed income holdings.
I love it that at your stage of career, you can invest in something as an educational opportunity. I think that's great. I think there's a lesson in there for all of us, I think, Rick. It is great to catch up with you. And I hope we'll see you again soon. Rick Rieder is Chief Investment Officer of Global Fixed Income at BlackRock and also the head of the BlackRock Global Allocation Team. Thanks so much, Rick. Appreciate it.